Welcome back to Planet Waves FM's continuing coverage of the United Astrology Conference in New Orleans. This is our last scheduled interview for the entire conference, so maybe something will manifest afterwards. But I'm speaking with Kelly Hunter of the Virgin Islands, an American astrologer, though, right? You grew up in the U.S.?
Mm-hmm.
And her specialty is Lilith in all of its forms. And Lilith is an archetype of the feminine in the older alternative gospels of the Bible. There's an earlier Hebrew myth about God having created a man and a woman who are both equal, and then that was supplanted by this absolutely, positively absurd myth of Adam and Eve. It's what a comic book that is. In fact, it was done into a comic by R. Crumb. And so, Kelly, welcome to Planet Waves FM.
Hello, thank you.
And let's talk about Lilith. Now, what are we dealing with when we're dealing with Lilith? A subject that my readers do like, actually.
Well, the dark feminine. It's certainly an evocative topic. And most people know Lilith from Lilith Fair, Sarah McLachlan's all-women's show, taking that name because it is an archetype that kind of evokes the autonomy of women, women's power, women's empowerment. I think that's one way it got into popular culture. When you Google Lilith, oh my goodness, there are just thousands and thousands of references, everything from, you know, mythic, academic, you know, artistic,
software,
goth bands, sex toy stuff.
It's a really pervasive archetype. It's almost more than Atlantis, which never seems to go away. Everyone just seems to be like, everyone's into Atlantis. And so Lilith seems to be, there's a kind of a subtle passion about this. Women find it empowering to hear about this, and the not quite Bible story is really amazing. So where do we start the conversation?
We could talk about the different Liliths.
Okay, so in astrology, there's at least three manifestations.
Yes,
of
at least
this,
three
of this quality or
that's what
energy.
Started to be intriguing to me when I first was working in drama. And I was working on the with Dragon Dance Theater, a mythic theater, and they do outdoor dramas. They started with Bread and Puppet Theater in Vermont, doing archetypal puppetry, mythic, you know, theater. So Dragon Dance Theater would work with a different myth, and we started working with the story of Inanna from Sumerian mythology. And Inanna's story is basically a retelling of the movement of Venus in the sky. Mm-hmm. And like now, Venus is descending in her retrograde phase. And
meaning approaching a conjunction to the sun.
Yes.
Disappeared from the being the evening star, which it's been all year. We've been looking at Venus as the evening star all year. And now that phase has ended. Venus is invisible.
Descending to the underworld. Is what it appears to be.
Appears to be, but actually descending for a conjunction with the sun on June 5th.
The woman surrounded by the sun, the woman haloed by the sun. Mm-hmm. I think of Venus as taking a sun bath.
Yes.
She's being renewed. She's being revitalized. And then she appears as the morning star.
And we can see her during,
changing personality.
Yes. Yeah, a big shift.
Mm-hmm.
Two of our guests today were talking about that. So the Inanna story, you're saying, is connected to the Venus cycle?
Yes. And Lilith appears in that myth, which is one of the oldest extant myths we have.
How does she appear?
Inanna,
and how do we know she's Venus?
Well, you just
Lilith. You're saying Lilith appears in the Inanna myth.
Yes.
Okay, so could you tell us a bit about that story?
Yes. Well, early on in the myth, Inanna picks a sapling out of this kind of rapidly raging river from some encounter in the deep seas. And she takes this tree and she plants it in her garden, the original Garden of Eden. And she's tending the tree, she's watering it, and she wants the tree to grow so that she can use the wood for her throne of power and her bed of marriage. But before the tree matures, these creatures appear in the tree. There's a serpent in the roots of the tree. There's a wild bird in the branches of the tree. And in the trunk, the dark maid Lilith takes up her abode.
In the trunk of the tree. So she incarnates as a tree trunk.
Well,
a tree body.
Yes. And I have been interested because of Lilith, of different stories of the dryads and the trees or tree goddesses. And
dryads isn't druids? Is that different than the druids?
No, dryads are basically nymphs who live in trees.
Ah, mm-hmm. Oh, they're tree spirits.
Mm-hmm, tree spirits. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you look, you know, say it's, you know, twilight and the sun is starting to set and the shadows are starting and you know, sometimes trees look like women. So Lilith is in the trunk of the tree, but she's connected with this winged bird. And she's connected to the serpent, as if, you know, kind of connecting heaven with earth. So the Dark Maid Lilith. Now, Inanna's pretty upset because there are these creatures in her tree. And she has to bring in her brother Gilgamesh to kind of get the creatures out.
So he kind of exorcises the tree to get them out, but then they're set free.
That's a way to look at it, Eric. That's excellent. I'd like that a lot.
And then once that happens, what happens next?
Well, as we were working with the myth, that part of the myth, the Halupu tree, there's a beautiful version of this. Beautiful virgin.
We'll take both.
of this that Samuel Kramer, who was one of the original Sumerian translators, and Diana Volkstein, who's the storyteller, official storyteller of New York City, put this book together, the poetry of the myth, translated from the clay tablets. Anyway, it's called Inanna, Queen of Heaven and Earth. And they have that scene of the Halupu tree with Inanna in the tree. And so as we were working the Mythic Theater version with Dragon Dance Theater, we had Inanna talking to Eve. Like, there are things you need to know. You know, there are things you need to know about love. You know, and what do I know about love? They say, you know, no, how can I know? I'm jealous. I'm powerful. I'm evil. It's like, no, I'm not. You know, and anyway, you know, in this day and age, we need to review any myths that demonize powerful women like Medusa, like Lilith. You know, what's that about?
Right. Well, of course. I think astrologers are pretty good at dredging that stuff up and giving it a new look. I think that's one of the things. We are the modern mythologers, basically.
Yes. Well, like you say, we're the storytellers. We are.
We are, and there are all these translators in our community who have, you know, started looking for the older texts and correcting them. And, mm-hmm. you know, once again, astrology is kind of providing a core engine for the academy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're retelling, revisioning the stories based on broader cultural context.
Yes. So you're talking about these myths that demonize the powerful woman. Mm-hmm. They all need to be reviewed and reconceptualized and the bias is understood for what they were.
And Lilith is a prime target.
Prime target.
You know, that story of Adam and Eve and Lilith in the garden, it's the original triangle. There's been so much.
So you think Lilith is the serpent?
Yes.
I thought so, too. That's kind of what I came to the conclusion of, was that she reincarnates or changes forms into the serpent, and the story continues on a slightly different trajectory.
I didn't make it up. On the cover of my book, Living Lilith, is a picture I took from the front of Notre Dame Cathedral. And there's a little section on one of the portals that's this sculpture of Adam and Eve. Eve's handing Adam the apple, and in the tree behind, there's a woman-headed serpent wrapped around the tree, and this is Lilith. She gives Eve the apple. And there's a Michelangelo also did that same image in the Sistine Chapel. Mm-hmm. And it really wove through a couple of centuries of Christianity, that woman-headed serpent in the tree. So there's Lilith. And the word Lilith, the name Lilith, is actually from a Sumerian word that means storm demon, or it's in this whole big cast of demonic.
Yes. So maybe the name, is the name right?
That's a good question, too. Right. It's the name we've got to work with. You know, I figure, you know, Lilith, Lily, Layla, Lola, Lulu, Kali, Lalita, you know, anything that kind of evokes that musical sound, you know, mm-hmm. she can be there.
Okay, so you've said there are a few different expressions of this in the astrology chart.
Mm.
One's an asteroid.
one's an asteroid.
With a kind of hand symbol. It's an interesting hand symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then there is the more... That's an asteroid's a thing,
it's
orbiting.
It's the hard rock Lilith.
Yeah. Okay, so then there is the oscillating apogee, spelled O-S-C-U-L-A-T-I-N-G, apogee, which is the BML. That's the little...
That's the true black moon.
Well, there's the mean and the true.
Yes.
I believe both are considered the oscillating apogee, but both are...
Well, the mean black moon is the mean average motion of the oscillating true black moon that goes retrograde quite often like a belly dancer wiggling.
So it's the mean apogee.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Where the actual apogee actually is?
Well, that's questionable because there are, as far as I know, those two main ways of measuring the black moon, but two possible other ways that a Costa Rican astrologer, Juan Revilla.
Juan Revilla, yeah.
Yes. He writes about that. And so it's not always the apogee. It can be a little off, from my understanding.
Right. Okay. So, using our software, we should know what we're looking at.
Yes.
But okay. So let's talk about how those two manifest in different mm-hmm. ways. How would you distinguish them? You use the mean position, correct?
I use both because Lilith is certainly mean, but she's also true, and I have, well, what it is. Is the second focal point of the moon's orbit around the Earth. No orbit is a perfect circle that would have one center. They're all elliptical.
Right.
So in mathematics, there are two focal points that around which the orbit is focused. The Earth is one, and this other point, it's a mathematical point. It's not even an object or a body or anything.
You mean the barycenter?
I'm not sure it's the barycenter.
That's inside the Earth. That's
yes.
What, okay,
yes.
So, but the apogee is just the moon's furthest point from the Earth.
And typically the black moon is at that furthest point.
Right.
Because it's otherwise the moon, the Earth is the other focal point.
Okay. So, in practice, how mm-hmm. do those work?
Uh-huh.
When you're reading with someone, what does one tell you versus the other?
Well... we have the mean and the true nodes of the moon as well, but the difference between the true and the mean black moon can be up to 30 degrees sometimes more.
Yes.
So you can have two placements. And honestly, I don't know what the difference is in interpreting the two placements. I advise to look at your two placements because one could be in one sign or one house and the other could be the other. I, for instance, have the mean black moon in late Aries and the true black moon in early Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
And both actually work. One of my first Lilith article in the Mountain Astrologer magazine was published when I was having a black moon return in Aries. But the true black moon in Taurus is, I think, part of why I like experiential astrology. I think it's part of why I've done a monologue of Lilith. I learned so much by playing Lilith in the Dragon Dance Mythic Theater version of that Hulupu Tree story. And that's the mystery of the black moon. It's very hard to interpret in any kind of cookbook way.
Yeah.
Lilith isn't like that. And one important thing to also remember about Lilith, no judgment. You can't say Lilith is good or bad. Lilith is an ego buster, and I think that's why she gets a bad rap. She's often mythologized as a vampire queen, or like a goddess. I think of her more like a Tibetan Dakini. A Dakini in Tibetan Buddhism is their version of the cosmic feminine that is like opens your awareness, at like whatever it takes to blow your mind. So that's what's going to happen where you have the black moon. And it can be your own stumbling block, especially if you're coming from any ego position. Black moon is going to bust you. But it can also be, and there's so many books written about the black moon in Europe, a lot of French books.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about some of the more positive interpretations have to do with it's like some essence of the soul. And that's how I think of it. The moon weaves the body of incarnation through the womb of the mother. And the black moon that's part of this dark point that has so much to do with the earth-moon relationship, I think of it as the desire of the soul that brings you into embodiment. and what it is, what you desire to embody at some essential soul level. And it, another good key word for the Black Moon is authentic. It's where you are being very true to yourself. So in that case, the two Black Moon really is something, you know, to look at, because it is a more true placement. But I don't think you can say one or the other is more correct. That's not a Lilith approach in any case.
Well, the true placement, not really a placement. My friend Tracy is a programmer. She's an astrologer and a great delineator. We do a lot of delineating things. But she programs ephemerides using these formulas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked her about BML once, and she said, here's the interesting thing about the true Black Moon Lilith, is that it is a prediction of where the moon will be when it is at apogee. But then when the moon gets to that point, it's not apogee and the position has moved.
David Cochran talks about it like a race car going around a track. You know, you can't predict, you know, because you can just step on the gas a little bit and you're going to go slightly out of orbit. You're going to go around that corner a little sharp, you know. Mm-hmm. It's constantly varying based on the different cosmic interplay and the different gravitational pulls of so many forces.
And you can't predict where it is, though. That's the thing. And it's sort of like, that's a piece of where my delineation comes from, is that it seems like it's there, but when you get there, it's somewhere else.
You can't predict Lilith. And that's why it was hard to write about her. You know, and even when I tried to write, and I did. I wrote two versions of Black Moon Through the Signs. And, you know, but you can't say cookbook. You can only say they're suggestive.
Mm-hmm.
Because Lilith is so specific and particular to you and your experience. Like she puts a finger right in that place where she's going to get you, because she knows the whole context that's so personal for you.
So what's the healing aspect of that? I mean, it sounds a little spiteful, but I don't believe that the cosmos is spiteful.
You mentioned the Barry Center.
Right.
Robert Cerdello, a depth astrologer, gives a story about Sophia, and I think of this as a Lilith story too, because Lilith can be seen as a wisdom goddess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a Dakini way, that opens up your mind, that spacious mind, sky dancer mind, which is beyond the mind. So Sophia is always seeking to be reunited with God, with the light. And at one point she gets distracted by an equally bright light, and she finds herself inside the earth, and which is an equally bright light, interestingly enough. And then to return to the source, she has to kind of yearn through every living creature on the earth back to the source. And I think there is not exactly a yearning, but it's where we seek to grow through all our layers of karma and incarnational, like sanskaras and all of that, to be able to experience that true essence of the soul. So she's going to do basically whatever it takes to blow your mind, get you out of ego, and free your soul.
Right. Okay.
Whatever it takes.
And entering a conscious relationship with that, dancing with it, rather than denying, resisting, demonizing, but encountering in a loving way, brings in the wisdom aspect in a way similar to Pluto or Chiron.
In March, we had that beautiful Venus-Jupiter conjunction at 9 Taurus, and the Black Moon was also at 9 for a few days right in there.
Yep.
I was lecturing on Lilith in Belgrade at a conference in Serbia, and that was right on my midheaven.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm giving a whole Black Moon workshop, knowing that there's some kind of channeling going on, and I'm not quite sure, you know. And afterwards, I ended up with a huge, like, problem with my throat that I am actually, I haven't really gotten a clear throat yet. And I said, okay, Lilith, I know you're trying to tell me something here. And so I've been kind of, this is where it gets so specific to you, and you're on the trail of your own mystery.
Right. Interesting. Now there's a third, if you count the calculated apogees as one, there's one that, this is one of the first things I encountered as a young astrologer, which is that there's this proposed second moon or dust cloud orbiting the Earth, which we never hear about.
It's so hypothetical. Astrologers say it must have been a dust on their lens when they thought they saw that thing.
Yeah. But then some claim that it was a dust cloud, that they actually saw an occultation of the sun by this dust cloud. Now, but this fits if we think about the oscillating apogee and how it's not there, but it's there, it's there, but it's not there. It's not where you thought it was going to be. Is Lilith in the Bible or not? Who is Lilith? We have a similar concept with this sort of ethereal and elusive dust cloud.
Yes.
Of which there is an ephemeris. I have it somewhere.
Well, it's sometimes called the dark moon, but sometimes
the
black
moon
is called the dark moon, so it can be very confusing.
But dark moon Lilith is the proposed dust cloud.
It's also called the Waldemuth moon, and if you use the Astrodynst website, it's going to...
The Waldemuth moon.
Yes.
How do you spell that?
W-A-L-D... E-M-U or M-A-T-H, because he was the mathematician that determined the orbit. So it's called the Waldemuth moon.
Right. Okay.
To
it's
clarify.
Not Wikipedia, so there's no quick what is
okay.
there. Or to, you know, it will obviously be challenged on skeptical grounds. But still, that factors into the whole story.
Yes. And, you know, I'm thinking, is it on the astral plane? You know, or because I think of the dark moon, and I once heard of a whole bevy of these moons. One of them's called Edith, one of them's called Lulu, I don't know. So anyway, this proposed dust cloud that soaks in the shadows of the earth. And I think of it as like, if our soul is descending through the cosmic realms and we're coming, you know, into earth, when we hit the black moon, the territory of that, not the black moon, that the moon, the dust moon, we pick up like the spidery, webby, cobwebby stuff. You know, that can be our own kind of karmic sticky stuff, or it can be just some of the collective sticky stuff. And we've got to kind of work this out. So I think of it as kind of astral. And I think of the black moon being possibly more etheric, mm-hmm. you know, connected to the light body. And this is more like, more has more emotional content or psychic stuff.
Yes. Yeah, astral is a bit polarized and a bit sticky.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I wonder who has this. If the Waldemuth did an ephemeris for this,
mm-hmm.
based on whatever, and it's sort of a quasi hypothetical point.
I trust the Astrodynst mathematicians for my placements of dark moon. The finest book, classic book, Delphine J. American astrologer.
Is that that blue? It's a blue, very plain cover.
It used to be yellow, but AFA just republished it, and it has a more blue cover.
I mean, I got my copy, must have gotten it about 95.
Oh, that was there's the ephemeris, and then there's the book interpreting Lilith. The ephemeris is said to not be exactly correct, but her book is what convinced me, and I came across her book at a meeting of the American Society of Dowsers, which was a big clue for me.
Yeah, interesting people, huh?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes. Yeah, I've hung out with some dowsers, and it's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I found those books there by Delphine J., and her interpretation of the dark moon in my placement just nailed me. It was like, there is something to this. I can't doubt it. I've never heard this articulated in this way, and I recognize something so true about myself. It so happens that I have the dark moon conjunct my sun. I keep forgetting that.
Right.
It also shows up in, say, like Bono has the dark moon conjunct his moon and Neptune in the midheaven.
Of you too, Bono.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who's another dark moon person? The artist Cezanne also has it conjunct his moon. Michael J. Fox has it conjunct his sun.
I have it conjunct another conjunction of Pallas, Athena, and Juno in Sag, in my sixth.
What degree?
Juno's at four, and then the conjunction I believe I've got this set to true BML, but let's not make a distinction, and Pallas is six, just above six, so they're both in the seventh.
Okay, degree. Mine's at 14 Sag.
Okay, so I work with this conjunction a lot. I mean, it's in my sixth house, and I work almost entirely with women as my support team. A couple of guys, but mostly mm-hmm. it's young women. I've got a very vestal chart, and so I'm supported by young women and the power and intelligence and multitasking abilities and all that, and their human skills, and on and on. Now put BML into the mix, and Well, I guess that's saying that I am in contact with the whole spectrum.
Mm-hmm. That I would say it's a bit of your Blue Book stuff in there.
Book of Blue.
Well, yeah, Book of Blue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the whole evocative, like photography that has those shadowy, almost otherworldly things. A lot of like beat poets, George Sterling. He wrote all this like totally like drugged out poetry, which is like, you know, witch's brew kind of stuff. Poets. I've seen a lot of poets. I've noticed people who've committed suicide have a strong dark moon.
Dark moon, black moon, either
dark
way.
Moon, particularly
dark moon.
More
the astral
so.
Level where it's difficult to know that it's not real. The astral plane is one of the biggest problems that we've got going. We've got to figure out when we're on it and when we're not.
Yes, and if dark moon is strong for you.
I don't know. I don't know my position of dark moon. I'm going to have to find it out.
Mm-hmm.
I try to stay off the astral plane.
Wait, didn't you just give me your dark moon?
No, I gave
position?
My black moon.
Oh.
My true.
Oh,
I believe
I
it's the true
oh, okay.
BML. It's,
okay.
it's commercial software.
Okay.
So, no, not dark moon.
Dark moon, you know, it moves 10 days through a sign.
Right.
Because it, you know, it's farther away than the moon we see and use, the eve moon, but it's, you know, it moves pretty quickly.
Interesting you connect the regular old moon with eve.
Well, some writing about the dark moon has kind of suggested the Lilith Eve myth.
Right, as kind of a foil,
yeah.
as a way to contrast and see them for what they are,
mm-hmm.
in some contrast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, just think of, you know, if we use Bono as an example for the dark moon, the Waldemuth moon. Think of Paul McCartney had black moon conjunct his sun, and John Lennon had black moon conjunct his ascendant. Think of the difference between Marilyn Monroe.
And then Bono has it with Moon and Neptune
moon and
in Scorpio.
Well, yeah, adds a little more of this. He said something like, we tap in, and I'm not quoting exactly, but about you too. We inhabit certain emotional territory that no one else inhabits.
Yeah, I would say that's true. It's
yeah.
I can't exactly figure out why I love those guys so much, but I can't stop listening once I start. And I'm curious about all of it, and you know. They're a pretty cool band. They're pretty good rock stars. I would say that's Ray Bono. That's
well,
pretty good rock star. I mean, he's
level.
Really a rock star.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's got a lot to say about women. And his whole scene mm-hmm. with women is very, like, I don't really understand it. There's all these love stories going on, but I can't imagine that they're all his wife and who stays home with the kids or something like that. You know, there's just so oh. many female characters who populate his songs.
And the way he stands out in the world, involved with politics and, you know, forgiving debt of third world countries. And, you know, that's something about his 10th house persona as well.
Yeah, he's not scared. And he has managed to go from, like, drugged out rock star to not, like, meeting the president like the Rolling Stones, but actually working on the level of power brokering on a level kind of like Bill Clinton, who's a pure trilateralist and one of the power boys.
Yeah.
And so somehow Bono has put himself in a position of influence.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there's people who become powerful or who use it have a lot of different sources, and clearly mm-hmm. clearly this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow or another, I don't know what it is.
You know, I can't bring up his asteroid Lilith right away, but asteroid might be strong for him too, because that's going to often be more active on a particularly social level. You know, where
right.
you're standing up for it's where you're kind of anti-social norm, women's libbers types.
Oh, that's
have
really
that one.
Interesting.
People who are standing up for groups that don't have anybody standing up for them. You know, they're standing up for a cause. They're outside, you know, the social norm. Like that movie, The Help, had a little bit of asteroid Lilith in there.
Yes, the lady who was the journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Let's see. Oh, no, come on, musicians.
Yeah, here's another good dark moon, black moon differential. Think Greta Garbo, who had the dark moon on her ascendant, and Marilyn Monroe, who had the black moon on her ascendant.
Marilyn Monroe had the
black
moon on
her
ascendant, and Greta had the dark moon on her ascendant.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so this is where you start to really see this at work, is the example charts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And still, you know, it's the same name, archetypally, Lilith. So, you know, you can say that each Lilith, which is a different thing, if we have a possible shadow moon, if we have like this mathematical point, if we have this asteroid, then it's like the same archetype in a different octave of the same note, which is what I was interested in, the tonalities and the octaves. And we haven't even alluded to the fourth yet.
What's that one?
The Hebrews have called Algol Lilith. Algol is a star in the constellation Perseus that represents the head of Medusa, represents perhaps the eye of Medusa that you don't want to look into.
Mm-hmm.
It's been called the most evil star in the sky. And yet, you know, here's another, you know, kind of demonized, powerful woman image. And so the star Algol has been called, which means the demon, Algol, has been called Lilith. So I think of that as the Lilith star.
Uh-huh.
And Diana Rosenberg, fixed star expert, you know, has seen historically that it's connected to beheadings and a lot of mass deaths. And so, you know, it does have a pretty dark side. But one of my favorite Lilith star examples is Enya.
Enya.
Enya has her
conjunct
Algol.
Interesting.
And she possibly has the black moon rising as well.
We don't know her time. That's the question. Righto. So, Paul Hewson.
Uh-huh.
You'll like this. He has asteroid Lilith, 1181 Lilith?
Yes.
It is
1181.
Square Minerva. Asteroid Minerva. It is also square Pandora, and it's conjunct Astraea, the goddess of justice, and Minerva, another justice figure and wisdom figure, which is conjunct Pandora. So he's got a little cross going there, and then just a fraction of a degree out is Siva, the asteroid Siva. That's in Virgo, and then to put in the Sagittarius arm of the great attractor, that big thing in mid-Sag, conjunct Hecate.
Yeah, wow.
So this is a... So he is drawing on a lot of feminine power ramped up by the great attractor.
Mm.
So he's got that kind of... I wouldn't go so far as to call him a male lesbian, but he likes to eat pussy. He puts that in his songs. You know what he means. He is saying, thank you, girls. I really dig you. So we can see here how he's getting some of the juice on the astrological level. Minerva, so the in a little cluster, again, it's Minerva, Lilith, Pandora, Astraea, the fifth asteroid, the one that predicts Neptune, right? There's a gap in the asteroid discoveries in the early 1800s, and then Astraea appears, and then a year later Neptune appears. So it predicts. So in addition to being the goddess of justice, depicted in courthouses, this is Astraea. I believe there's a connection to Neptune because of that being the fifth asteroid, and then comes a planet. And if you want a good laugh, read the Wikipedia page on the discovery of Neptune, how it was discovered like 20 times and nobody saw it. Like, there it is. No, it's gone.
Oh, you
gone.
Hear
there
those
it is.
About
now
the
it's
two
gone.
Times.
There it
yeah.
is. Now it's gone. It's like, oh, that's like Neptune in the chart. So, okay, then a great attractor, just kind of cooking Sagittarian pure vector energy. Hecate, women's wisdom.
And the
body
the,
wisdom.
The way shower in the sense of the torch.
Ah. Oh, that's... Uh-huh. Hecate is a torchbearer. So there's a Statue of Liberty. Is that Hecate
or a
version of it?
I never thought of that. That's gorgeous.
Okay.
I think of the Statue of Liberty as Sirius.
Sirius.
The star Sirius.
Ah.
The star of Isis.
As an incarnation as Isis.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because it represents also, it evokes the fact that the United States has the star... I mean, the sun near the star Sirius in zodiacal alignment at 13-14 Cancer, that is where the star Sirius is. So I think of it as the goddess of the United States.
Let's just finish Bono for a second.
Right.
It gets better. Okay, uh-huh. So we're still in about a 2-degree range so far. There's a centaur. Ooh. I don't know that well. Okuro, I don't know that one very well. I'm going to have
Okuro,
to.
Okuro, do you mean Orcus?
Okuro, no.
Okay.
No, it's centaur.
Oh.
Orcus is a Plutino.
Right, that's right.
House at 14 Pisces.
Hmm.
Situation, conditions in the early environment, conditions in the home, and then oscillating apogee at 16. So the true oscillating apogee is the true, quote, true.
True black moon.
The true thing that's not there when you go to try to find it. And that's all clustered in about a 3 to 4 degree range.
That's
a quite cluster. A grand cross. It's quite a grand cross. Worth an article. That's really worth, when I do that one, I will consult you and quote you lavishly if you'd like to participate, because it's a good one, and thanks for the lead
on
that, because I'm pretty fascinated by the guy who isn't. But and the voice. Oh my God, what a voice.
Yeah.
Yep. And they've kept the band together for all these years, through all these changes.
Through all his global political trotting.
The Onion covered that one where the other guys in U2 are getting down on Bono for always be missing practice because he's off saving the children somewhere. All right.
Glories in it. You know, he says, I'm a rock star and I can do this other thing.
That's correct.
That's just bad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The more power to him and more of everything else. All righty. So, thank you. Wonderful conversation. Thank you for, you know, helping wrap up this long conversation that I've been having with the people of the United Astrology Conference, Kelly.
Lilith likes to have the last wink.
All right. Well, we will give her the last wink in this conversation. How can my listeners and readers find you?
I'm on Facebook. Kelly Hunter Astro Mythology.
Okay.
And you can email me at Kel Hunter, K-E-L-L, Hunter at earthlink.net.
Okay.
And my webpage is a little broken.
Little 90s.
But it's got some good Lilith material on
it. Okay, what's that?
W.Helia, H-E-L-I-A, star.com.
Heliastar.com. Mm-hmm. Okay, we will link to that.
Okay. It just needs a little help. But it's got the Lilith stuff on there.
Maybe you'll get some.
Because that's great.
We're talking to people who... Some of whom can
great audience.
Do websites.
I've been following your stuff for years.
We have a great audience.
Yes.
We have an audience that can take astrology on any level. And they are reading about politics. They're reading about relationships. They're reading about sex. And the conversation happens every day at Planet Wave. So I'm
glad to be part of it. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. All right, then. So pending a possible conclusion summary piece, this does wrap up our coverage of the United Astrology Conference 2012 in St. Louis. No, I keep saying St. Louis. We are not in St. Louis. I have been to St. Louis. I've got to stop doing that. Maybe next time. In New Orleans, Louisiana, and we're wrapping this up at 2:30 on the afternoon of May 28th, 2012. Thank you for listening. If you've listened to all of these, wow! But there's lots to check out mixed in with these many, many different interviews of many different people. And we've really gotten a diverse, profoundly diverse group of people on this interview roster. Really representing. We've done everything but ancient astrology on this one. And you know what? It's pretty easy to find out about that stuff, and I will do something on ancient astrology. I'll round up the people. And my work's pretty influenced by ancient astrology. I'm aware of the bigger chunks of that. But that said, that's what's missing from this conversation. But I think we've covered most of the good bases, most of the important bases, or whatever bases they were. Thank you for listening. I may be back in a few again with that conclusion if I'm feeling up to it. I will catch you all on